This podcast is sponsored by IQ Bar.
I've got good news and bad news. Here's the bad news. Most protein bars are packed with sugar and unpronounceable ingredients. The good news? There's a better option. I'm Will, and I created IQ Bar Plant Protein Bars to empower doers like you with clean, delicious, low-sugar brain and body fuel. IQ Bars are packed with 12 grams of protein, brain nutrients like magnesium and lion's mane, and zero weird stuff. And right now, you can get 20% off all IQ Bar products, plus free shipping. Try our delicious IQ Bar sampler pack with 7 plant protein bars, 4 hydration mixes, and 4 enhanced coffee sticks. Clean ingredients, amazing taste, and you'll love how you feel. Refuel smarter, hydrate harder, caffeinate larger with IQ Bar.
Go to eatiqbar.com and enter code BAR20 to get 20% off all IQ Bar products, plus free shipping. Again, go to eatiqbar.com and enter code BAR20.
So before we even start, your nephew, your godson. This kid, I told him today that I was going to be talking to you. And he's like, what do you mean Theo Martin's going to be there? And I said, well, because, you know, he's a rapper and he and he does his music. I said, I've shown you his music before. And he goes, you know what I can do, Mom? And I said, what? And he does like his little version of beatboxing. And he says, wait, he says, do you think Theo Martin could put me on his thing? I was dying laughing. I was like,
And I love that stuff though.
I love stuff like that. You know what, babe? You keep on working on it. And the next time you see Theo Martin, you bring it up to him yourself.
Yeah. No, we could always find something. Like, yo, my nephew, that's how my nephew does a lot of my production, because he was like, yo, he'll send me like beats. And in the beginning, obviously, like everybody is learning, you know, and he would send me beats and I could hear like where he was going with things, you know, when they're like creative like yeah. that, you yeah. know, you kind of get, especially if, you know, this is just your thing, you can hear like, oh, I see what you're trying to do.
Yeah.
And Trey is really into like beat making right now. So he be doing some things and I'm just like, yo, that's actually really crazy. I can't believe you put that together. So my nephew, he got to like a point where he became like a master, like out of nowhere. Like so fast. Like one day I just remember he was sending me stuff and it sounded like, you know, like he just started. And then like 6 months later, it was like, this dude is like a master.
Yeah.
And I cannot believe he would send me beats sometimes and I'm like crying, like, oh my God, I can't believe he is this great. And now
I
he
think
does.
It's a bloodline thing too. People don't realize how a lot of this right brain stuff that we do is seriously genetic.
Yeah.
Because I was always musical. I always used to sing. That was always my dream.
Yeah.
I got older now. My voice is very different, but it used to be something that I used to do.
Yeah.
And in our family, that's something we do. So I always look at my son too the same way, you know, by the way, Trey, that surprised me.
Yeah.
Because, you know, that comes from a lot along lines of that artistry, right? And it's about finding it and honing it, because like I said, my son, he's very right-brained. He, you know, he's all about music. He can hear, he'll tell mommy, I hear lyrics in my head. And I'm like, I used to be the same way.
Yeah.
Writing, and I'd like, put it down, just write it on a notebook, whatever. Right. It doesn't matter if it makes sense, you know, like just do it. And it's something, so he's very musical. He's very old soul. So like, you know, he loves all kinds of music and stuff. And he made me laugh with that, because I was like, you know what? And, you know, with his YouTube and stuff, he'll come out and he probably listens to the song. Because he's little. He will hear a song. And he's like, oh, he'll listen to it. He digests the words. He loves old school rap.
Wow.
My son will sit there listening to Wu-Tang with me.
Mm.
He can sit there and tell me, oh, that's LL Cool J or that's RZA. Like, my son is, you know, it blows my mind because he really listens. He loves himself some Eminem.
Yeah.
And he's like, I'm like, always like, you do know he's telling stories, right?
Yeah,
so
yeah.
We don't want to mistake actions for stories, right?
Right.
But he's like, yeah, mine, but he'll listen. And like, so it's that. So I said to him, I said, you know what? I said, next time you see your Theo Martin, you talk to him about that. You know, that kind of thing. So I thought
of
that was
course.
Really cute.
Nah, that's really beautiful. Cute. And I'm glad that he thought of me with that. I love that. Like, and I just, I think it's important that we leave the floor open for our kids to be creative.
Hell yeah.
You know, because I think being like, I grew up in the Bronx, but eventually I ended up having to go to school in Pennsylvania. I moved with my dad into Pennsylvania, went to high school in Pennsylvania. So I got to see like, oh, this is what like this is how it's so different from like our way of thinking in New York, in a place where, you know, it's really diverse.
That's right, it's cultural, multicultural. That's
but right. What I learned is like the problems are like, it may be different problems, but it's problems here, it's problems there. Mm-hmm. And when I moved to Pennsylvania, like I just got like this, okay, I see like, I don't know how to explain it exactly, but when I moved to Pennsylvania, I realized, I think at a very young age, like, all right, I can see like we're not so different. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? Whether like between our people, between, you know, suburban folk, it's not really much differences. It's just different problems. And like your problems is not too small. Like it's all good, you know? And I think when you see both layers and things like that, like with my son, like he lives out here, I lived out there. So like I watch him and I'm like, what you be thinking about? Like what's in your mind? As because me and Lissette talk about like, I'm kind of going all over the place to prove a point, but like me and Lissette, we talk a lot about like, yo, all right, now we kind of at a stage where like we want our son to know what he wants to do with his future. You know what I'm saying? But then I think about it, that's where I was getting at, is like when I lived in Pennsylvania, the whole thing was like, I can see a really big push for school, which is understandable. That's beautiful. There's nothing wrong with that. But then I think it's also important to like really observe your kids. And because sometimes you might see like, oh my God, maybe they were meant for something more, like something different that doesn't involve like having to go to school, which I still think school is necessary. But I also like for me as a kid, when I was almost at the point of finishing high school, I seen like it was weird out there for people like, oh, you're not going to college? Mm-hmm. Like they make you, it makes you feel like alienated. Yeah. Like, oh shit, you're not going to college. And now you feel like, oh, this is something I have to do. I have to go to college.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? But then you don't even, but then you're kind of putting on the back burner what you really want to do with your life.
That's what happened to me.
Right. So mm-hmm. I think like for my son, I leave the floor open. Like I still say, yo, you have to go to school because obviously you need that, you know, you need that discipline mm-hmm. and everything. You need to learn.
Basics, just the basics. Yeah. You need the basics, that's right.
But I also observe, and my wife does an amazing job at it too. We sit there, we observe, and we're like, do you like beat making? Is that your thing? Like, do you feel like this is like do you love it? When you do it, are you always thinking about it? We ask questions like that. And I think that that's super important. Sorry to be long-winded, but...
Nah, but that's... I feel the same way, right? When I was younger, that was a push. College was a push. Where are you going to go to college? Mm-hmm. I had so many dreams before that. You know, I was always in chorus. Mm-hmm. I was always, you know, Gina could tell you, my friends, because we were in singing groups. I used to go on auditions. I used to do all those kinds of things. And then I did it even when I was in college.
Yeah.
And then as I got older and you start to work more and you start to realize it's not that I got to be in this hustle where I'm not making no money. I'm just hustling.
Right.
Versus I got bills to pay. I got to do certain things to get there. Right. In my life. Mm-hmm. And sometimes you make those decisions based on what's right there in front of you at the moment. Right.
Right.
And then you look back sometimes and you go, you know, I don't know if I made the right decision or not, you know, because at some point you're like, you know what, I always could follow my dreams. But if you're able to hone something that your kid is good at
mm-hmm.
and support them in the right way, you know, Nico talks about, I want to be a YouTuber. And a couple years ago, I might have been like, you've lost your damn mind. Like, you're going to school. Like, not that he's not going to go to school, but, you know, you need to do better in school, right? You need to have a certain path. Now I'm like, yo, this kid got talents that I don't have, that a lot of people would kill for. Yeah. And then I'm basically based in reading, writing, and arithmetic. Mm-hmm. Right, he's got a whole nother kind of brain,
right,
that might be made just for those kinds of things, right? So it's really important what you're saying and how you're honing that for Trey. It's just, we have very, most of us, and you know, and again, you're like 10 years younger than me, but in general, even culturally, we always have parents say, this is the way you need to do it, because you need to do better than us.
Yeah.
And in their way, a lot of times doing better than us is going to college, is getting that full-on education, is being in a corporate position, things like that.
Yeah,
that's not for everybody. Mm-mm. Like I told you before, that shit ain't for me, and that's what I'm stuck in, right? So kind of it ends up like that. So listen, if we go any further, all right, before we go any further, I want to do this the right way. So to the audience, welcome back to the Prosecco Queens podcast, where we keep it real and unfiltered. So I'm Teresa, storyteller, forever dreamer, and your official Prosecco Queen. So today it's especially fitting that we have Martin Oliveri here, aka Black the Wave God, aka my primo-in-law.
Yes.
Because it is Valentine's Day. So whether you are in love, healing, building love, or just loving yourself a little louder, today is about what we choose to give our energy to. So this person sitting right across from me is someone who talks about love in a way that isn't just romantic, it's intentional. Love of craft, love of family, love of growth, love of becoming better. So there's always been this stigma that you can't be an artist and a devoted partner. That ambition and stability don't coexist or shouldn't coexist.
Yeah.
And you've said yourself, no one believes you can be an artist, father, and a husband, and that's been driving you since day one.
Yeah.
So today we are talking again to Black the Wave God, a New Yorker who made a bold move to build a whole life across state lines.
Yeah.
An artist who refuses to separate his evolution from his music.
Appreciate that.
A man who speaks openly about loyalty, mental health, growth, and what masculinity actually looks like when it matures. So again, Wave God, welcome to Prosecco Queens.
Thank you so much. I appreciate that introduction. That was amazing.
Well, thank you. Thank you for being here. And if you guys would see what behind the scenes looks like, trying to get even the light to look right is crazy here. So luckily he's related, because someone else might have been like, I'm done with this nonsense, right?
It's all good. Shout out our director, Gigi.
That's right.
Gigi Productions.
That's right. So it's Valentine's Day. So yes. Let's start here. Let's kind of jump back in here. You've talked a lot, and I've, you know, if anybody's ever seen, you know, you're on IG, you know, a lot too. And you talk a lot about breaking the stigma that you can't be an artist, that some people think you can't be an artist and a family man at the same time. So when did you first realize that that narrative existed?
That's kind of been a thing since I've noticed it as a thing since I became an artist. Cause I, when I first became an artist, you know, I kind of knew always what I wanted to do, because music just came to me and I was like, oh my God, this thing changes the way I feel. And like, whoa, like what if I can do that for people the same way I'm feeling it? I've felt like that since I was a kid, and it kind of runs through my blood. So I started making music like at a young age. Like I would say I started writing music around 13, but when I started recording music, I came across a group called IPC, and they're amazing even to this day. Like, you know, I still talk to everybody from the group. I actually just, my one man's Jay Through the Truth, he's like one of the artists in IPC, and he's actually dropping an album soon that I did a single off of.
But when, info, we'll put it in the notes. We'll put it in the episode notes.
Yeah, too. For sure. I appreciate that. And you know, I was probably around 15 when I had met them, and he put me in a studio, and he was like, yo, because I told him, I want to record. I'm an artist. I didn't know what I was doing. I didn't know what I was getting myself into. You know, I didn't even know what that meant, but I knew that I wanted to do it. And these guys gave me a chance, even though I had absolutely no idea, you know, I couldn't even stay on beat, you know, but they always gave me a chance. Like, they was always like, yo, it became like such a thing at some point with IPC. They would call me, literally, I was in high school at this time, 15 years old. They would call me and be like, yo, where are you right now? And I would be like with friends or like playing, like literally at that time I was playing football for school. I would be playing football in school and they'd be like, yo, where are you right now? You need to be at the studio right now. So I would be recording music with them, man. Yeah, you know, I think they had their own style, which was like real Harlem. At that time, Dipset was popping, so they were like they had this Dipset like style.
I like Dipset.
Yeah, I love Dipset. Yeah, and they had that real Dipset style. So I would be watching them, and I'm like, oh, is this how I'm supposed to be? You know, and when I would write music, you know, they would be like, maybe you should say it like this, which is a normal thing if you, you know, if you got other people that you're doing work with, like you want to hear constructive criticism. But I think I was so young that it was kind of like molding me.
Molding you. I was gonna say,
to be a certain type of artist. And I would see the things that they would talk about. And I'm like, oh, okay. You know, this is what I should be talking about too. And I think at some point, it was always in my head, like, yo, just be you, you know?
Because the lived experience is different.
Right.
Like, they talk about lived experiences, and that's where our music comes from. But yours is a different experience.
Right.
You can't talk about things you may not necessarily relate to.
Right, exactly. And I think that was, like, really important. But, like, as far as, like, being a husband and stuff, you know, I think, you know, realizing that there is a stigma of what type of person you're supposed to be an artist. I realized that at like a young age, probably like 15, 16, when I started doing this. But then when I became a husband, you know, I'm like, how will people look at me now? Not that I cared about how people would look at me, but it was just a thought, like how would I be viewed as an artist right now? You know, I'm a married man, I have kids, and I wonder how people look at that. And at some point I realized, like, maybe that's gonna be a thing that people legit, because like I said, it's stigmatized in hip-hop. The way we're portrayed is like womanizing dudes that just, you know. And then I thought about, like, how many artists are like fathers and husbands, most of them, right? Like,
yeah, for real,
most of them. But I don't see that being like front and center for everybody. And I thought to myself, like, what's wrong with that?
Yeah.
You know, that's kind of weird that we don't have more fathers and husbands out there like talking about these things. Talking about being a father, what's the experience of being
real
a father?
Life, like legit real life.
Yeah, yeah. Like, yeah. And I think that it's important that we have people to do that, because we're people. What is the, you know, there's no problem with me talking about having a kid and what that did for me, because that might do something for somebody else in the same position.
So let me ask you that. Do you think, and this is going to sound maybe dramatic, but it's interesting, do you think that being a family man almost in the hip hop space is like a form of rebellion? Like doing the opposite of what people say you should be doing, or what they think sells?
I don't really, like for me, I don't really think like that. Like I don't even think about things like that. Like, you know, being a rebellious person. I just think, you know, as a father, having kids, what I think about is like, what will I leave behind for them? Like, what, you know, when I'm gone, what can they look back on and be like, yo, like, and when they do look back on those things, will they be like, yo, oh my God, like, this is my dad. Like, I can't believe my dad said things like these, like this, while there's people out here just talking about like reckless shit and their fathers and, you know, husbands too. And it just sounds crazy. And I think that's what music now means for me is like, y'all, I want to leave something behind when I'm gone that they could look, because music is forever. It'll live forever. So I want to have something that they could look back on and be like, oh my God, bro, that's my dad. Like, that is my dad. And I see like little glimpses of it now. Like when I take my son to school, you know, and his friends, not that long ago, I took my son to school and his friends from his football team, I was letting them cross the street. And the kid was crossing the street. He's like, yo, what's up, Black the Wave God? Which is wild to me. You know what I'm saying? Like, because how'd you even find my music? I asked my son too, like, yo, did you just show them my music? He was like, nah, they just found you, bro. Like, which is crazy to me. But I seen his face when they said that, and he like propped up of and course. Like he felt good. And I'm like, damn, that's what it's all about to me. That's what I care about. You know, that's really what I care about.
That's like when Nico says, my mom has her YouTube channel. Yeah. Like, yo, it's kind of like,
it feels good.
It feels good that your kids want to prop you up too, because they're proud of you.
Yeah, yeah.
That's the point.
Yeah, that's a big thing for me, man. Like, that's really all I care about is like, you know.
So then if that's the case, then what do you think, based on what you've learned mm-hmm. now from coming up all the years ago, where you were kind of trying, they were trying to mold you into maybe being something that you were naturally not, mm-hmm. to who you are now, what you've learned.
Yeah.
As still an extremely young man in that sense, right? So what do you think, if you looked at masculinity, what does it look like to you now versus what you thought it was supposed to look like when you started?
You know, I think I even, as a kid, you know, as a young man, I seen, you know, I obviously experienced too being like, you know, macho and stuff like that. And I know that was like
cultural.
It felt like it was a thing. But even back then, like the type of person that I was, my friends used to call me like preacher and stuff like that. Cause, you know, that I thought a lot about, I still do. Like,
sounds like me, Mother Teresa was the name.
Yeah.
I feel you.
I just think about life and like things. Like, I'm like really philosophical with shit. And in those days, like, I guess we were too young to be thinking about stuff like that. But I would be like, yo, what's the actual outcome if we go and we do this wild ass thing that we're planning to do? Like, what is the outcome? Are you thinking about what can happen after? And these dudes will be like, oh, who cares, bro? Like, what you talking about? You know, and I'm like, oh, so this is not a normal way for me to think, I guess, right? And but I that's just who I was. It was like,
it was normal
in me,
just not to everybody else.
Yeah,
it was normal,
right?
Yeah.
And for a while I thought it was like weird to think that way, you know, like, oh shit, you know, maybe I should be tough, you know, I should like be, you know, handle things. And it did give me structure for like, don't let people walk all over you, which I think is important. I think it's important that our kids understand those type of things, because you do get taken advantage of, unfortunately. And, you know, my son is exactly like it, I swear, like, he's so much like me, down to the things that I used to do as a kid, like taking a bunch of my mom's like products, lotions and toothpastes, and like fucking mixing them around and pretending I was Dexter, like down to stuff like that. My
Texas
son
Laboratory?
Literally, that's I used to be in the bathroom like, yo, I'm about to make a fucking like something. And my son has literally done the same exact like type of thing.
I can see that with him.
And I realized, wow, he is so much like myself that sometimes I'm watching him, and not to get, you see, I'm preaching. You see, this is why they call me preacher. But when I think, like, when I think about my son, I'm like, yo, don't ever treat, like, him the way you were treated as a kid.
Yeah.
You know?
Oh, my God, yeah.
It makes me realize a lot of things like that when I see the same type of things that I used to do, how he expresses himself and shit. I'm like, yo, the best thing to do would be not so much the same thing my parents may have done, you know? And he's sensitive in certain ways, just like me and stuff. And yeah, I don't know. He reminds me so much of myself. And I'm just like, if I'm being real, bro, I know I'm going left, because I know your question was about masculinity now and later, but
this is answering that question.
Yeah, I just think, like, man, the way I look at life is like all of these things are just shit that we made up.
Yeah.
You know, we made up masculinity. We made up fucking words. Who's to say that?
The patriarchy.
Yeah.
All that.
Yeah. It's all made up. So I don't think about shit like that. I just think that we're all people and we're all different, and we need to be, like, okay with being different, you know?
Well, let me tell you this, because what the audience doesn't know, we've all known each other about 10 years. That's around the time you came into our lives, mm-hmm. right? And by the way, it was very fast and very furious.
It sure was.
One day we're meeting you, the next day we're at your wedding.
Married.
Which, by the way, their anniversary is tomorrow.
Yes.
And Martin is not only, if you mentioned.
Love you.
Love you, prima. Not only have you mentioned that my son just officially became your godson.
Which is a huge honor. I appreciate that so much.
In the best way. But you have adopted my goddaughter,
yeah,
my nephew, and you guys have a beautiful daughter, young baby daughter together.
Yeah.
So in 10 years, you have grown so exponentially.
I appreciate that.
Even not just as a family man, but just as a person, and even what I've seen. So in those 10 years, what's interesting is that there are things that we've hung out hundreds of times, probably. Mm-hmm. And we're just chilling and talking. And, you know, we don't always necessarily get to the gritty of things, right? And so you're like, oh, shit.
Mm-hmm.
I never even thought to ask that question, right?
Yeah.
So as I'm sitting here making questions and thinking about things I wanted to ask you, this, me and Gina talk probably a lot more than we probably should, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
Enough. Going through some of the stuff that we go through with relationships and marriages and the men we choose to keep in our company. Apparently, and we realize how so much of the music you put out is not just your personality, but it shows how you love out loud.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't think of that term until Gina had said it to me. And how you love our cousin,
yeah,
our prima hermana, so beautifully and out loud. And when like when I say fast and furious, like all of a sudden one day it was like, oh, Lisa's dating this guy. And for us it felt like that, right? Lisa's dating this guy. Oh, he's moving out here, they're getting married. We're like, damn.
Mm-hmm.
okay
yeah,
all fine, right? Cool, we're gonna be there, we're gonna support, that's what we do, right?
Yeah.
And you have even used your music as a way to speak like a love letter.
Mm-hmm.
To her and to what you have built together.
Yeah.
And I know one of the songs that we talk about, and I'm going to put a bunch of music and links and stuff in the show notes, or to go to the episode
that.
Notes. And we will put some clips of songs in here. I told you that as well.
Mm-hmm.
But one of the ones we talked about is For You.
Yeah.
Because I had to even ask you the name of it, because in my head, it's just like, it's just might as well be For Lisette.
Yeah.
Right? And it is just a beautiful love letter.
I appreciate that.
To your wife and to your relationship and to the family you've built. And it's not that you don't hear rappers or singers writing love songs and writing to this person. And maybe it hits different because I used to babysit her. She's one of my sisters, right?
Yeah.
But the fact that there are still men out there who are not just on their own healing journeys,
mm-hmm.
but are able to and be proud to put that love for their family and their wife out there.
Yeah.
So there's never any question about maybe you're it for me, right? Mm-hmm. And I think that's a beautiful thing. So tell me about for you. Tell me about, I think I know the inspiration, but when you were writing it, when you were recording it, what did Lisa, I haven't actually said what she said about it.
Yeah, I think you should definitely have her on at some point. I would love to like hear like her actual feelings about the song. And if nobody else believe, yeah. Is you down for me? Or would you die for me? And if nobody else believe, would you try for me? Promise I'll ride for you. You heard I die for you. They try to hurt you when I let them bullets fly for you. Is you down for me? Or would you die for me? And if nobody else believe, would you try for me? Promise I'll ride for you. You heard I die for you. They try to hurt you when I let them bullets fly for you. I give you my heart, you give me kids back. I think it's only fair the world is what I give back. Said I'ma be a star, you told me big facts. You want a fairy tale, then we gon' live that. You keep me center when I'm off balance. I look at you, I feel no malice. And you was there when I was down, picking up the baggage. Streets calling, but you hear, so the voice vanished. Girl, you the one and you know it. Like what I did to deserve you in this moment. And how'd you manage to fix what was so broken? And how'd you manage to love me with no motive? Music. When I make music, I don't think about the concept I'm going for at all. Like,
I feel you on that second when I'm writing.
Yeah. It just, like, I feel like it comes from, like, I feel like being, it sounds crazy, you know, but I feel like being, when you're an artist, that creative side that you have, it's like streaming down directly from God. Yeah. Like, it's, I can't explain it, but when I make music, it just falls out of the sky into my head and I just, like, put it down. And there's times, you know, not every song comes out a hit, which is fine. There are times where, like, when I get the idea, like, when it just falls into my head, I'm like, oh shit, like, this is gonna be something huge. And I'm not thinking in the sense of like, oh, like this shit is gonna reach millions of people. I'm thinking like, oh my God, when somebody hears this, like they are gonna feel, that's what I care about, is like making people feel things. Yeah. And when I was in the middle of writing that song, I was, I'm not afraid to say it, I don't care. I was crying, bro. Like, legit sobbing, like as I'm writing the words out, I'm like, I can't even believe I'm able to put this together into like formal thoughts. But I think when I speak, especially when I'm trying to communicate with people, I think I just do it better when I make music. Like I communicate it way better through a song, which is something I really like. It's great, but I also have to work on it. Like it's one of the things I'm currently working on. Like when I speak to people, you know, I want to be able to make it as beautiful as when I'm making a song, to be able to speak to you and my wife and, you know, really get things across. But man, that was probably one of the, I still like, it's very hard for me to listen to. Like the song start playing, I'm like, I'm fighting tears right now. I'm trying not to cry. Ashley said, literally, like she'd be fine in the car and she look over at me. She like, you okay? I'm like, I think so. I just like, this is really like, it's just one of those songs that I wrote that really just came from every fiber of my being. Like, and she made it really easy. Honestly, she makes it really easy to love her because she's amazing, honestly, in every way possible. She just cares so much, and like I can't even describe to you, like I can't put into words, and that's why I made the song. That's why I made the song. But it's hard to put into words like the amount of love that I feel for her. And I think when you have this person, and you get, for men, For me personally, when I got to a certain point in my life, which was quite recent, I realized like I knew from the rip when me and Lissette first got together, I'm like, I knew when I laid eyes on her, I was like, God, that's how I'm going to marry her. I swear to God. Like, if my sister showed that we met through my sister,
yeah,
best friends. My sister was like, yo, you know, you guys got the same birthday. I said, oh, bro, you cannot show me her. What? Oh, my God. She is so gorgeous. Like, I would marry her tomorrow. Like, and which is funny because I married her like a few months later.
We were at the engagement party and everything.
Yeah, I think I just knew. Like, as soon as I seen her, I was like, that is, like, literally the woman I've been dreaming of. And then when we finally met each other, it was, like electric. Like, oh, my God, this is literally the person I'm going to spend the rest of my life. I literally felt like that. I did. I felt like that. I don't know if she did, but I was like, this is 100% the person I'm gonna spend the rest of my life with. And it even got to a point, because at that time I was still living in New York, where when we would leave each other, I felt mad emotional. Like, why am I feeling like my life is spinning out of control right now? Like, what is going on? I had, like, I'm not even lying to you guys, and I don't care. Like, I don't get it. But I would legit be trying to go to sleep and I would be having panic attacks. I'm like, what is going on? Like, why is this happening to me? I don't know what any of this means. I think so. Yeah. I think so. I was just like so, you know, crazy about her.
It sounds like, what do they call it? Soul recognition, soul tie recognition.
I think there is a lot of that. I think there is a lot of, like, I don't know. I think I just did before somewhere. Yeah.
Because can I say what you're doing and what you've been doing with Lissette, with your family, with raising children differently than we were? You're breaking generational traumas,
mm-hmm,
and curses.
Yeah.
And the way we were taught of love, or what love is supposed to be, not only are you building it differently for yourself and your family, you're building your relationship differently, which, may I say, affects every bit of artistry that comes out.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think a lot of people think that you have to, in order to make yourself do better as an artist or in whatever sector you are an artist, you have to always dig deep into the worst parts of yourself.
Yeah.
And at moments, that's correct.
Right.
I know with my writing, when I was going through some of the darkest moments in my life, yes, some of the best stuff came out because it was stuff that I couldn't verbalize any other way,
mm-hmm,
but in my writing.
Right.
If I tried to talk it, it was too hard to even get the words sometimes,
mm-hmm,
but it would flow out onto the paper.
Right.
Right. But when you're in a position where your life changes and you are now in a position to say, holy shit, I don't have or don't feel those deep recesses much anymore.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like that gives you a whole other way to express it.
Yeah.
And that's what you've been doing. Doesn't mean that you haven't, that you don't still have demons that you fight. We're all human, or
mm-hmm,
fears, or, and by the way, having a family brings up a whole nother set of fears you wouldn't even know, yeah, that you had unless, yeah, you have it, right? And I feel like the way you're able to express it,
mm-hmm,
is not necessarily unique, but it's really breaking that stigma, breaking those trauma responses that we have, breaking trauma bonds,
because, yeah,
we have so many trauma bonds we don't realize that, you know, we create and that we're brought up to. So when you say that she, you know, you have like panic attacks and stuff, it's because your soul was recognizing something in her,
mm-hmm,
that you needed for your healing as well. As well, mm, as her healing, right? Because I know for a fact we've had this discussion before, you know, about us having, you know, rough childhoods. You didn't have the easiest of childhoods either, of,
mm-hmm,
course, right? But being able then to take your mental health seriously, having someone who makes you see other parts of you that,
yeah,
make it worth healing. So tell me about that. Like, when did you start taking your mental health seriously? Was it before? Was it, you know, when you and Lissette started dating? Was it just after, when you realized, holy shit, in order to maintain, in order to be better for my family, I need to do better for myself.
That is a lot of it right there. That's like 90% of it. Was definitely that. But I think where I come from, mental health is kind of like a, it's all in your head type thing. Like, yeah. You have complete and utter control of how you feel, which is also true. When I do like a full circle and I'm like, okay, I'm acknowledging that mental health is a real thing. Now I'm deciding to take this shit serious and I have to really figure these things out because I have kids that need me. I have a wife that needs me to be fucking mentally coherent to be able to, you know, be a family. When I come full circle back around, I'm like, I realize that a lot of that is true. You're in control overall of how you choose to feel about certain things, whether it be like, that was really terrible. I tend to find that, you know, pain is honestly a vehicle for growth.
It can be, for sure. Yeah. If you use it.
If you choose for it to be that way. Yeah. But I think, you know, when you're on a journey, you get to a point where you kind of realize that, because then you see all these like little pieces of things falling into certain places and then creating these bigger pictures. And I think a lot of that, you know, was happening around me for a really long time. I really truly believe that, like, I'm honestly protected by God because I don't even know how I got here sometimes, you know. I don't know how I got here sometimes. I don't know how I ended up in the positions that I ended up because I really don't feel like I did all of these things to get here. I just feel like I was placed here.
Well, then, in that sense, what do you think you had to unlearn?
That,
because that is a huge thing with men, that you get to a certain age and men will say, and again, I know from a lot of experience, women, not like women are perfect, but we are more likely to admit when we need help. We are more likely to get help. We are more likely to say, I have to do this for my family.
Yeah.
Generationally, culturally, men are less likely to do that. And what they do is they bring that trauma into every relationship. 100%. They destroy everything by self-sabotaging. And then they go, well, I'm in my 40s. I don't know why I'm still single or why I can't have a relationship or those kind of things, right? Mm-hmm. So growing up with, again, culturally, we understand that as well. Because even as females, it was like, there was no such thing as therapy. That was none of those things. Like, you didn't tell your business to anybody outside of the household, right? So it was like for us to be able to then finally say as adults, I got the insurance. Something is wrong. I'm going to get therapy. I'm going to get the help I need, right? Because I realized my faults in a lot of things and how do I handle life. So for you, what do you think you had to unlearn? Could be one thing, could be 12 things, right?
Yeah.
In order to help make you the man that you're still growing and healing into.
Everything. Especially when you come from where I come from, there's a survival way of, you know, of living and just thinking. And when you get into a relationship with a person that you know for a fact, like, there's no question, you like, yo, I'm definitely gonna spend the rest of my life with this person. I need all my people to understand, when you have a woman that challenges the way you think.
Preach, just preach, keep going. Keep going.
That means that person was placed in front of you to make you better. Like, it's just that simple. It's just, you know, and, you know, me and Lisette are amazing. To me, we're the greatest couple in the world. I don't care what nobody say, but we have like our problems like everybody else. But honestly, when we have any type of disagreement at this point in my life, not before, because I don't think I had the capacity to process and problem solve and really do like the self-reflection to understand even myself. But there, we have conversations sometimes and it's like, yo, I think you really need to, like, these are problems. And I really think you need to sit down with yourself and really think about these things. And in the moment, you know, you might feel attacked. Mm-hmm. You might feel like, yo, this is just who I am.
Yeah.
But if you, I promise you, if you just take 1 second in silence and give yourself, like, just clarity, like, just get away from all thoughts, like, just clear your mind completely. Sit in silence. I promise you this works. Your mind starts to autoplay the thing.
Reflection. You know,
and you're so literally self-reflecting, but you're doing it from outside of yourself. Because I think what we, even for men mostly, is that one of the biggest mistakes we make is not recognizing that ego is a tool that is mostly like misused. You know, a lot of people say, like, get rid of the ego. You should have no ego. That's not true. It's a tool. Because then if you didn't have that, you would have people walking all over you. But I think it's a tool that we misuse, especially in relationships. And I think it could be, like, so damaging and really, like, ruin relationships. But, yeah, you know, if you give yourself that time to sit down in silence, like, it's playing. Like, I literally see it like a movie. Like, I see her presenting this thing to me. And when I think about it, these days I live a lot. Like, I hold myself accountable to everything, even things that are out of my control. Because when you do that, you don't give other people power over you, right? Nobody is in control of how you feel about anything. So I tend to hold myself to the best of my ability. I tend to hold myself accountable for everything. So having that mindset, when I sit down and I think, when I'm thinking about the things that I'm being told about myself, I'm like, she's right. I should be digging down deep and fixing all of these problems about myself. That really is a problem. Why do I react like that? You know, and my biggest problem at this time of my life, I guess, is not seeing those things right away and being like, yo, you are absolutely right. Because there's times where, you know, I'm like, I get defensive. I'm like, well, what you mean? You know, I'm like, what you mean? Like, you know, but then when I sit back and I think about it, I'm like, that's right. When I stop being like, when my ego, I'm not using it in this moment, and I think about what all of this whole shit means, it's really as simple as this person was placed in front of me. Yes, because she is the love of my life.
And she's your mirror.
Yeah.
And sometimes what's crazy about ego, about female ego, male ego, whatever it is, we run from our own reflections.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, you can run from your own reflection, but you cannot run from someone else's perception, right? Yeah. And the reality is, like, you could be looking at your... You know how many people, they say, oh, you can't even look at yourself in the mirror.
Yeah.
And it's because you know for a fact somewhere in there, you don't feel fully aware. You don't hold yourself fully accountable. You still blame your past on your present. Mm-hmm. There comes a point in time in every adult's life where you can't blame your childhood anymore, right? You can't be like, yeah, I had a fucked up childhood. Great, that most of us did, and most of us had, some of us had worse than others, and so on and so forth. But the reality is, you can't be 30s, 40s, 50s still going, well, my mother didn't treat me right, my father beat on me, whatever the case may be.
That is true.
You know, and having your ego is kind of edging God out, right? So it's saying, okay, I'm better. I don't need all this. It's about me, right? And so many And again, I'm going to say it more than anything else, because I think men also are afraid to admit it out loud, that that ego, you need to have an ego death. Mm-hmm. Right? Because you're right. It can be a tool if used properly, but it needs to be a tool in healing. Mm-hmm. As opposed to a tool in self, and I mean, a way to be self-sabotaging, right? And so many, and I'll say a bunch of us as well, I've listened, there's been many a time I've done it too, where I'm like, I've been through so much fucked up stuff and messed up relationships that I'd be like, if someone is nice to me, the first thing I'm doing is running the opposite direction, because I'm like, nah, that's not real, mm-hmm. right? Because in my head, I'm like, that's not even possible for someone to be genuine.
Right.
Right? Because when you don't hold yourself accountable, when you don't see other people holding themselves accountable and going through the process of healing, and which healing doesn't end. Healing is consistent. It's a journey through your life.
Right.
And just when you think you got it, some other shit comes along that you got to work through that, right?
Yeah.
So I think that one of the things that we've actually talked about before is that you're a proponent, and you're, other than Trey, you got a lot of women around you.
Mm-hmm.
So you're a proponent of being a woman supporter. What does that mean to you exactly? Like, for you personally?
I think it goes beyond, posting a picture or a video. I think, you know, Lisette actually, I mean, she taught me, like, mostly how to be a good partner, mostly everything, honestly. So if I ever meet my time now, my final thought would be you on the aisle, and the birth of our own child. So if the world's turning on you, then I burn it down. Would you down for me? Or would you die for me? And if nobody else believe, would you try for me? Promise I'll ride for you. You heard I die for you. They try to hurt you and I let the bullets fly for you. Would you die for me? Or would you die for me? And if nobody else believe, would you try for me? Promise I'll ride for you. You heard I die for you. They try to hurt you when I let them bullets fly for you. My heart beats for you. I only breathe for you. Whatever action that I make, I only think of you. And so I sing for you. And I will sing with you. We both born the same day. Yes, I'm in sync with you. You perfect, you perfect, you perfect. You make every moment on this earth worth.